One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
What is going on out there, everybody? And thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cimarron, Uncle Ham, Cam Hale, and joining me, of course, the man that I couldn't do this without, at the survivor of all the things bad in the lung, Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in studio. Excited to be here today. We got some interesting guests that we're going to have on, as well as some interesting stories and sightings, as always. Yeah, man, feeling good, looking good, getting ready for for spring and getting ready for summer. And
hey, you have got your color back.
Yeah, I'm starting to feel better.
I can tell you got fat again. Looks good.
Yeah. Putting the weight back on after not being able to eat anything for like 2 or 3 weeks.
I wanted to ask you this, and now that we're kidding, I'm messing with you, but did you think, because I know some people say when they've been on a high dose like you were of all those antibiotics, did it change your taste buds?
I don't know if it changed my taste buds, but I definitely did not have near the appetite that I did previous.
Because I've heard people talk about like it changed the way food tastes. Like when you hit it that much, because of all the, I guess, the good bacteria that's in your body, it gets killed is just like the bad, you know, all the bad stuff in your body too. And so like all the biotics, you know, because these antibiotics, it'll kill all your biotics out.
Right. That's why you got to get probiotics.
I don't want to get all scientific and stuff, but it gets all entangled and intertwined. What was that, Joe Dirt?
Yeah. Yeah. Do you ever go to like the drug section of the store?
All the time.
And then, you know, you'll go to like the probiotics and then I start rating because it'll say like, I don't know, 1 million. And then the next bottle will say it's got 5 million.
Yes.
Then one says it's got 50 billion. You know, it's almost like, was it 7 minute abs? No, you want 5 minute abs.
That's right.
You know?
That's right.
It's, I feel sorry for the guy that's making the one, because now there's somebody that's overdoing it, one-upping him, and they're like, I don't know anything, so I'm like, I'm just going to buy the big one.
I always take two of the big ones.
Right?
So many probiotics.
Yeah, so many probiotics.
So did they tell you to get on that whenever you got done and all that stuff?
Yeah, but I already kind of take that stuff.
I don't take it as much as I used to, but I used to take it a lot more, and I used to always drink all the kombucha and all that, and I've kind of gotten out of it, and I can actually honestly tell the difference.
I don't like kombucha.
Oh, really?
I've tried a couple different ones. Not a big fan of the way it tastes, but yeah, I do. I take probiotics.
It's funny you bring it up. My wife's the same way. You can open that stuff up in the room with her. Dude, she can't stand the smell of it.
I know.
And she loves vinegar.
I know. I do, too. I mean, but I understand the health benefits, but that's one of the things. There's other ways around it. Like, I eat lots of yogurt, and I love yogurt, you know. And
have you ever had kimchi?
No, I have not.
I want to try it so bad, and I've never had it. I hear how good it is. And I'll tell you how wild it got. My wife came home with a bag. I'll have to let you see them next time if I haven't eaten them all by then. Pork rinds that are kimchi barbecue pork rinds.
Oh, yeah.
And she, again, can't stand the smell. And I love these things. But I hate vinegar, which is weird. I cannot stand vinegar. But I'll drink kombucha all day long.
Well, that's good. I mean, I would like to try it, but I've heard it's awfully finicky. Like, I'm trying to think of something I could compare it to. Maybe like Menudo or something where if it's made bad, it's bad. But if you go to a place that knows how to do it, like it's good. So
like any kind of tripe, they got to make sure they clean it well. Yeah, I got you.
Sweetbreads or whatever you want to call it. I've heard the same thing about kimchi. I've never had it. But I like cabbage and things like that, so I'd be willing to try it. I did see a show one time where they like put it in the ground and it ferments for weeks and stuff. I don't know if I have a strong enough gut for that.
I don't know if I have enough, for that. Well, right? Folks, if you didn't notice, of course, the music's a little different. Things are a little different. We're changing things up just a little bit on that, so it's easier to put out on all platforms because
the copyright strikes on everything.
Look, we have emails between us and Derek, and we've had them for years, and we have the rights to use his music, but you have to go through the hoop jump every time you get ready to use it on anything. So we were just like, hey, look, that's it, man. The fun is over. We're going to just, we've made up our mind and then that's it. We're going to have to move on with some other music, non-copyrighted music that we'll just have to play and plug in from here and there. But we're also going to shorten up the music stuff and just let it flow. We're just going to kind of more of, I guess you could say, just a free-flowing content instead of the breaks and all that.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, when we started almost 7 years ago, I mean, there wasn't near as many people doing it. So we just kind of guessed, let's try to do it kind of like a radio show. I don't know.
Yeah, we had no idea they were going to tighten the reins like they've done.
And people now just seem to do a lot more free form, and it seems to be working. So we'll try it out. Look, if we get a lot of negative feedback, then it's easy to go right back to this stuff. To be honest, though, I mean, like, Derek hasn't put out an album in quite a while, and so I've been reusing the same Pretty Lights songs for six and a half years.
Yeah. He just tours.
I know he does. Well, look, he's a fantastic musician.
Well, and a lot of it, too, is free form. It's not it's not like he lays it down like you do a track or like a song, like you would like a regular recording artist. A lot of it is just in the mood, in the moment stuff that he can do too.
He's still fantastic. I think he's amazing, taking existing work and figuring out how to mix it together.
He's my favorite. 100% of all the people that do it. He's my favorite.
Not that I'm very deep into that world. You know, I've only dipped my toe in, but, I remember finding out about him from your son, who was a teenager at the time.
Yep.
Shortly before we started the podcast, and I just reached out like, hey, can we have permission to use your music? And they were like, yeah.
He come right back. He's like, oh, absolutely. Yeah, what are you doing?
And just give credit to, you know, where to find my music or whatever. But I'm sure just like back then he might not have known really what podcasting was, where if you probably asked today, he'd have a whole lawyer team and be like, no, absolutely not.
The same as the Black Angels.
Same
thing. We legitly reached directly to them and they were like, yeah, how much are you using? How long? What's it going to be on? We told them, they're like, dude, that's great. Perfect. Cool.
Yeah,
and that was that.
And then now they make Budweiser commercials with the Elite intro song. I mean, all kinds of stuff. So, it's kind of funny.
It is. It's very funny. All right, look, we're going to jump into it. We've had enough chit-chat. We've had enough lip flap. We are going to get into some fun with the interview, but I've got something here crazy that Sarah emailed us that she had found this on Reddit. Sarah, thank you so much. It says, horror at scout camp. Folks, listen to this. It says, so in Canada, now this was posted by Duct Tape Cat.
Okay, cool name.
Yeah.
I'm digging it.
It says, so, in Canada, we have a scout system similar to the U.S. Our system by level is beavers, cubs, scouts, and ventures. This happened during cubs. So that's going to be the second level for those keeping score. So there was this house on the property of the camp. A beautiful house. Nice wooden smell. It was great. And during this time, all the troops around us gathered for a weekend up at the house. Now, there were maybe six or seven troops gathered, and we would do wooden car racing. So the house was split into two rooms, one for males, the other for females. When they say wooden car racing, pine box derby is what we call it here. And there was a closet doors that connected each room. And at the time, there was maybe 10 to 20 guys in one room and maybe 10 to 15 females in the other. We'd be sleeping on the floors with our sleeping bags. And after brushing, me and the guys went back to the guys' room. We were talking, and one of the kids said that this place was haunted, and that the closet that leads into the girls' section was where someone was hanged. Now, I'm not going to lie, I always had a strange feeling of the doorway. So much, in fact, that I specifically put my sleeping bag across the other side of the room from it. There was also an air vent there. That I was afraid as well, so I then moved it into the middle. Even if I had to sleep between the two dudes there, I didn't mind. Now that night, after the counselors put us all down to sleep, made us all be quiet, because, well, you know, we'll all stay up talking all night if we didn't get told to go to sleep. So it was around 4:30 in the morning, and I woke up. My head was facing towards that closet, when I noticed something going down. The closet door was slowly opening. I was kind of stunned. See, I thought the girls, they shouldn't be in there sneaking around and spying on us dudes. That's when I see a shadow, no bigger than 6 foot. It was crazy tall for its size. Now, best I can describe from memory, it's like the color Vanta Black. It says Google it.
It's like darker than dark. Have you ever seen that?
Yeah, I've seen the material.
It's like I've actually seen automobiles painted in it now. I mean, it is so black that if it's black, it's blacker than that. It's like, I don't even
know. It's like you put up like a black sock inside a coffin and buried it.
Yeah. It's black. Very black.
And it goes on to say that it was very blurry but crisp until the middle. It slowly inched its way across the wooden floorboards, making no sound. It just silently passed each kid as it went by. I didn't want this thing to see me, so I turned my head. It passed more kids. The more it went, it started easing down, and by this time, I was trembling. I didn't know what it wanted. It kept moving slowly, passing a few kids ahead of me, and then it happened. The closer it got, the more I felt a sense of dread. Not just that dreadful feeling, but the air around me started getting colder. And not just this physical cold feeling, I could feel the cold on my organs, in my insides. And the air got more dry and cold like liquid nitrogen. The greatest amount of that feeling happened right when it passed me. I was maybe a few feet to the door when it went to the other entrance that I was at. And I'm not kidding you, it was literally turning the doorknob. It pulled the door open and slowly exited. Before, of course, strangely enough, it reaches back and shut the door behind it. Now that morning, we were getting up from bed and we walked down the rickety old steps. And one of the kids said, "Did you guys see that shadow last night?" And maybe four kids' eyes got real wide and we all blurted out, "Yes." We talked about it for a short while. Now let's just say that after that experience, everyone's sleeping bag was moved to the other side of the room.
So multiple people saw this shadow being
come creeping and sliding through the place.
I'm not going to lie, man. Encountering a shadow being would be very terrifying. I think more so than like a Sasquatch or something.
Well,
you know, like I said all the time, it's easy to avoid Bigfoot. Just don't go in the woods.
Yeah, right, that's exactly. What's wild is they talk about, I wish there would have been a smell involved because that would have hit the trifecta of weirdness. But now at least we have the sense of dread and the cold.
Yeah, that's true.
But what I like is what they said is the cold on the inside. Like I could feel it in my organs.
Yeah, that's like bizarre. That
very bizarre.
Never heard of that. Well, speaking of Sasquatch, check this out. This is a pretty cool sighting that a guy had. And of all places, you wouldn't think, but Nebraska. It says, "I grew up near Niobrara, Nebraska, not far from the river. My brother and I were able to do a lot back then. We were outside almost year-round. We really enjoyed fishing in the river for catfish. It was the 1950s and things were much different. No one cared much about what you did, so you didn't cause any trouble. We usually fished in the morning and evening during the summer. In June 1959, we planned to hike to an area on Medicine Creek and spend a few nights out there. It was only about 5 miles from our home. On the second night we were there, we heard some strange screaming sounds coming from one of the bluffs just west of us. Wasn't like anything else we've ever heard before. We also heard something heavy moving through the brush and trees. I'll admit it, we were scared. As the night went on, things began to quiet down. Now the next morning, I walked towards the bluff while gathering firewood. As I approached a rocky pass, I caught a glimpse of something big and hairy running away from me. It wasn't a bear. This was Nebraska. And whatever this thing was, it stood at least 7 feet high. It was huge, with a wide back. That was enough for me. I was ready to move camp somewhere else. My brother and I packed up and started back towards the old trail. I guess we had walked about a mile, then stopped to fish at a good spot we knew about. We spent most of the day there. Late afternoon, we decided to hike back home. I wasn't feeling well anyways. The area was much different than today. It's part of a state park with lots of roads and camp areas, but back then, it was much more rugged. Well, it was around 6 p.m. and we were close to the footbridge at the river. My brother suddenly stopped walking and pointed at a clearing on the riverbank. He said, "Man, I see someone over there." We stood there for a minute. Then this huge, hairy creature stood straight up and looked right at us. It let out a loud grunt, swinging its arm up and over its head. Well, we started running. I don't think we stopped until we got near the roadway at the end of the trail. Now, over the years, we talked about our run-in with the creature and how we're both sure that it was a Bigfoot. I only told a friend about it a few years later, but he thought I was lying to him. We've been back to the same area many times since then and never noticed anything. I contacted the BFRO back in the early 90s, but they never came out to look around or take a statement. Well, that's my story. Thanks, Gary. So, you know, pretty, you know, interesting story where, you know, a guy when they're kids, they're fishing. I'm thinking of like the Andy Griffith Show out there with their cane poles, yeah. Catfishing, having fun during the summer. And they had a run-in with the creature. It never chased them. It never threw any rocks or boulders at them or, you know, made strange sounds on their tent.
They didn't have the fear or the sense of dread.
No, they just saw the thing and it stood up and they took off running. I don't blame them. And
it's just like the all-American, all-natural Sasquatch encounter.
Well, absolutely. And once again, it's, you know, it's not one person seeing it. Him and his brother saw it, just like the story you were talking about with the shadow people.
Yeah.
Multiple people in the same room all experienced the same thing. So how could they have all imagined it, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know. The stories like this, you hear these all the time, and it always makes me want to ask, how many people out there have had a similar sighting just like that, where nothing super exciting, nothing like a movie happened. They just saw the thing while they were fishing or while they were walking their dog mm-hmm. or while they were hunting or while whatever they're doing. And they just saw the thing and that's it. I mean, my aunt, she lived in Washington State. I think she lives in Arizona now. And she said she was driving her car and she saw one run up the hill.
Like it was nothing.
Nothing. She's like, I know it wasn't a bear. I know what bears look like. Didn't look like that. Looked like a person, but I know it wasn't a person. And she saw it for about 15 seconds.
See?
And she's now, why would you just make that up? And then years later, you can talk to her.
Be like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah. They're just like, yeah, I saw it. Yeah. Pff. Not like we always talk about, like the locals. People are like, man, I wonder if the thylacine could be there. And the locals are like, well, yeah, we see him from time to time. Yeah. It's not a big deal. I mean, do you jump up and down? Like, you know, if you see something rare, like a puma or something, no. You see footprints, you don't freak out. You're just like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like you talked about privately, we were talking a ring-tailed cat. They live in Texas, never seen one.
Yeah.
I don't even know somebody who knows somebody who's seen one.
I have seen them brought in, like the people that, when I was much, much younger, had killed one, and a guy had one mounted, things like that. But I have never seen one in the wild. And I've seen a lot of wild, you know, funny wild critters, but never that. I know they're there.
I know people who have seen Bengal tigers in Texas.
True. In Texas.
Never seen loose, a ring-tailed cat.
Folks, I don't mean like in a cage. I'm talking about loose on their deer lease. Mm-hmm. Loose. Like low fence, it just showed up. Now, you talk about ruining all the fun for being in the woods at that point. Yeah.
I would have to call in you guys with my cell phone or walkie-talkie or whatever.
Come get you out of the stand?
Come get me. I'm not leaving.
I would. I legitimately would call one of y'all and be like, go get everybody together.
Get the AR.
Get the guns and come get me because I'm not getting down while this thing is. Although I did see that video where it jumps up and gets the guy off the elephant.
Oh, I've seen those. They're coming through, cooking through the tall grass. Now, dude, that's terrifying.
I don't think my tripod's much taller than that elephant, so I know it could get me very easily.
And you see how fast that thing comes through the grass?
No, I try not
to. All you see is the tail.
Yeah, no thanks. No thanks. Speaking of seeing things, how about when you don't see something? And what I'm talking about, folks, is Lon posted this and shared this with us. He got from a person named JJ about the Glimmer Man. Glimmer Man appears during a drum circle in North Dakota. That's right, folks. Get a load of this. It says a witness describes the appearance of a Glimmer Man during a drum circle on the banks of the Missouri River in North Dakota, and that some people believe that these are cloaked Bigfoot. Now, here is what was sent. Now, listen to this. It says, I'm writing you from North Dakota, and I was intrigued when I saw the term Glimmer Man on your website. I had a similar encounter 2 summers ago in the area called Kimball Bottoms, or, as the locals call it, the desert. Anyway, I was down there at a drum circle that they were having, and I don't know if it was the drumming that attracted this thing or what. I was facing the water and the banks of the Missouri River, and it still being light outside, around 7 p.m. in the summer, I could see everything clearly. I thought I saw a heat signature on the opposite bank, like heat rising off a hot parking lot in the summer. This stood out to me as I'd been staring in that area. Anyway, zoning out as I went into the almost trance-like state due to the drumming, I started seeing this thing move. I stopped drumming and walked over to the edge of the bank. The more I watched, the more I realized that this heat signature looked like it had arms and legs, and like it was swaying to the drumming still going on behind me. My friend came up and asked what I was looking at, and as I pointed it out to her, other people from the circle started to notice that we were pointing and staring at something across the river. More people stopped drumming and joined us on the bank. Some could see what we were seeing and others couldn't. Eventually, nobody was drumming anymore, and this glimmer man had stopped swaying and was watching us watch him. More than one person had mentioned that it looked like the invisible yet visible alien from the movie Predator. It was after maybe 3 minutes of watching this invisible being, and yes, many people tried taking pictures and video of it, only to not see anything when reviewing the images on their phone. Not surprising when you were trying to photograph a nearly invisible heat signature looking thing. At one point, we could see this thing moved back into the tall reeds, and we were surprised as the reeds parted. Those who didn't see the being couldn't help but see the reeds part as it moved away. A few of us sat back there for a good hour, waiting to see if this invisible being came back, but we didn't see anything. Now, however, many people freaked themselves out by talking about where this entity could be. Was it lurking in the water, walking along the shore, hiding in the trees, etc.? I have to agree, they all had viable points. It was a very surreal encounter and only deepened by my beliefs on things existing in the folds of what we call reality. JJ.
Wow, see, another sighting of the Glimmer Man.
Another, but here's what I like. The drum circle brought it in.
Yeah, I like how it was dancing. Moving.
Yeah.
It was swaying to the beat.
That's right. So, man, another, look, it's one of those deals we kind of pried the lid off and more people are like, hey, now that I have a name, because you think about it, before the name Glimmer Man, how would you, as a predator-like being, a cloaked being, but you start talking like, what does all that mean? Now you can, they start relating Predator. We start talking about what we've talked about, all the stories we've been receiving, all the stories at Lawn. Like it's, you can't say it's a flap, but it is more people who've come forward going, what I saw had to be that thing.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I couldn't really make it out. But you also think about taking a picture of it. It would be like if you made something out of a single sheet, not mass, take a sheet of cellophane and cut out just a man shape and then go stick that thing out at about 40 yards and try to take a picture of it with your phone.
Right. Yeah. You're not going
to
get,
you're not, you could see it, but you're not going to be able to photograph. It's not going to photograph well. So there's you another Glimmer Man sighting, folks.
I really like the sightings of the Glimmer Man.
Heck yeah.
I think it's pretty cool. It's something I didn't really hear of years ago, but it seems like now more and more people are coming forward with they had a sighting. And speaking of sightings, we're about to have an interview with two really interesting guys who each have their own independent podcast, talking about David Flora from Blurry Photos and, of course, Derek Hayes from Monsters Among Us. And they both do really good podcasts. We've had David Flora on the show before, but it's been some time. And I don't think we've ever had Derek on the show. Derek, Monsters Among Us podcast is pretty cool because it's kind of like a, instead of him reading the stories, he actually has his listeners call in and tell about their sightings with the strange, the paranormal, and things like that. Very interesting. And then David, he does kind of like we do, where he breaks down segments and tells stories about the paranormal. But anyways, the two of them have teamed up together, and they are trying to put together a full-length documentary that's going to be exploring the Anza Borrego State Park. If you're familiar with the Borrego Triangle, this is an area that's in an area that's pretty much called the Borrego Sink. It's about 45 miles southeast of Borrego Springs, California. And for whatever reason, in that part of the desert, there's all types of strange sightings, Cam. There's sightings of ghost lights, you know, kind of like we have down in the Marfa lights or the Brown Mountain lights up in North Carolina. There's ghost lights, ghost dancers, a phantom stagecoach. There's a spirit of a woman called the Lady in White that is seen. There's even an 8-foot skeleton. That's right, Cam. Apparently.
Yes.
Apparently there's an 8-foot tall glowing skeleton.
Whoa, with glows too?
With a lantern inside of its chest.
This is awesome.
And it's said to roam, you know, the Badlands between Superstition Mountains and the 17 Palms in the state of Arizona. Now this 8-foot tall skeleton was first seen back in the 1800s by a prospector named Charlie Arizona. Now, Mr. Arizona was settling down at camp for the night when he heard his burros acting up. So You know, he went to investigate. This is when he reportedly saw this huge skeleton, 8 feet tall, with a lantern glowing through its rib cage. And he said the thing was just shambling around in the desert, like it was looking for something among the scrub brush. Now, this guy wasn't the only guy to see this thing. Over the years, numerous other people have seen it, too. In fact, two guys actually went out looking for it, kind of like David and Derek are going to be doing right now. And if they get this thing funded, they went out looking. They spent 3 nights. Apparently, on the third night, they saw the skeleton. And, of course, they did what any of us would do. They pulled out their rifles and began firing at the thing. Of course, their bullets had no effect on this, you know, spectral wraith or whatever it is. Many people claim that the skeleton is just like the ghost of a prospector out there looking for some lost mine or whatever. But I don't know why the thing's 8 feet tall, you know. And also, yeah, the lantern inside of its chest. Is this a story that's made up around these ghost lights? Like when you see the ghost light, you just can't see the skeleton, but that's the lantern that's in its chest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. But
love the idea of it being in its chest.
Yeah, the Borrego area, the Borrego Triangle, it's a very strange area. And one of the strangest things, not just about the 8 foot tall skeletons and stuff, but oddly enough, there's sightings of Bigfoot or Sasquatch. That's right. In the desert. We've done an entire episode on that thing. I think I remember talking about the Sasquatch being seen near a drag strip and things like that. And one of the events that one of the sightings took place back in 1939, when a guy was camping alone in one of the dry gulches in the area. And the story goes that the man was sleeping by the fire when he suddenly was awoken by a strange sound, and he smelled a foul odor. And when he sat up and looked into the darkness, he was shocked to see a band, it says, of two-legged hairy creatures stalking around his campfire on the fringes of the light.
A band of them.
That's right. The beasts were described as, Cam, get this, having white or silver fur. And, of course, they had piercing red eyes that glowed.
Oh, that's awesome.
And apparently they just snuck around for a little while and then, you know, disappeared into the night. But in the same area that this guy had this sighting back in 1939, 30 years later, a guy named Harold Lancaster, and he had a sighting of his own. He was camping in the area, and he described how an enormous hair-covered bipedal creature stalked around looking for something in the underbrush. Now, of course, he thought he was going to be attacked, and so he pulled out his revolver, which he had with him, and he fired it into the air, you know, to scare the thing off.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently it worked because the thing slinked off into the darkness again. But, yeah, I mean, you wouldn't think about a giant creature like that living in the desert, because we've talked about it. What would it feed on? This is one of the things, again, where is Sasquatch or Bigfoot, is it a physical thing, or is it like the image of something bleeding through? Because what is there to eat out there? Jackrabbits, rattlesnakes,
yeah,
scorpions,
javelina.
I mean, there's just not a lot. And for something to be like, you know, a large.
But not just that. For it to be feeding and moving, it would really have to expose itself.
Yeah.
I mean, if not, it would have to be 100% nocturnal and have to hide in said caves in that area.
Yeah, something like that. But so they're going to be starting a Kickstarter to fund this documentary film, and it's going to be called Shadow in the Desert. So let's get into that interview.
All right, everybody, here we go. Sitting down with some good friends of ours that I don't know if they wanted to or not, but they've got sucked into the podcast realm as well. Today, we actually have peers, friends, researchers, and some people here to talk about making a badass movie. Our friends Derek Hayes from Monsters Among Us and Dave Floor from the Blurry Photos Podcast. What's going on, fellas?
How's it going?
Hey, guys.
Hey,
been
man.
Too long.
Right?
Yeah, it's been a while since we've had you on, David, and I don't think we've ever had Derek on, so.
It's never happened, so I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. Welcome to the show. So what have you guys been up to?
Oh, you know.
All kinds of stuff. You know?
Don't say podcasting.
Getting a heat stroke in the desert.
Trying to survive, you know, that kind of thing. But what we're here for is David and I are going to shoot a documentary. We found this place in Southern California here out here where I live that basically it's a window area that nobody's talking about. And we kind of want to expose what's going on here. It's a place called the Anza Borrego Desert or the Anza Borrego State Park.
Well, and y'all had let us privy to a little behind the scenes of the stuff. And then as we were discussing off airs, I was giving Kyle a hard time. Apparently Kyle knew something about it. And I did. I just didn't know that I knew because of Kyle's trying to show off flexing his brain muscle. But this is something I don't guess, even like what we discussed, it's not extremely well known, but there is a long history of very unique and weird experiences going on in this place.
Yeah, there are tons of things that happen in this state park. And Derek came to me about a year ago and was like, what do you think of this thing called the Borrego Sandman? And I looked it up. I included him in my Miss Cryptid contest. That's once a year. And there's a lot of cool stories behind it. But turns out there's more than just a hairy hominid running around the desert in Southern California. There are tons of reports of UFOs, and there are tons of paranormal reports that come out of there, too. Ghosts. There's like an 8-foot skeleton that's supposed to wander the desert. Lights. Ghost lights that have actually caused some real damage and a death in the past. So we just kind of were researching it, and one thing led to another and another and another. And then we were like, man, we got to go explore this place and take people along with us.
I can't tell you how excited I am about it. And I love it whenever somebody turns over a new rock, flips over a new leaf. We get to look around at what's scurrying around in that area. Mm-hmm. Before we dive into this, how did you two guys meet up to do this? Like, how did y'all, besides the fact that it really is, and we joke about it, everybody jokes about it, is you make some really good friends with other podcasters where it becomes like a group of buddies that all get together at a bar or all get together at the gym or whatever it is. Is that kind of how this thing grew between you two?
A little bit, yeah. You know, I live here in California, and California is like a mecca for camping and hiking, that kind of thing. So Anza Borrego is a place that me and my wife had visited a few times. And I'd heard about all these, well, not all of them, but a handful of these legends, you know, the ghost light, the Sasquatch creature, the UFOs, the dog man that are out there. And I wanted to kind of learn more about it. So I started looking for books and started looking for documentaries, and nothing existed. So that's when I knew we had to make something, and I knew I couldn't do it by myself. So I was trying to find somebody that I thought would be a pretty good counterpart. And David was the top of my list.
There you go.
I was way wrong. I was so wrong.
Yeah. Way upside off. Down. That's what he's
That's what it was.
It wasn't my first choice, my third, my sixth, my 16th. You're like, I forgot about this guy.
Choice on the third page.
Let's That's right. That
yep.
So this is how it all started.
He came up with the idea. I love the idea, you know, and the more we looked into it, the more crickets and worms and stuff scuttled out from under that rock, like you were saying. And so I went out there to LA for Alien Con last year. We did a panel together, and then we were just, you know, kind of talking about it, talking it over, and it seemed like a fun thing to at least give a shot. And flew out there in October, and we went out to the desert with our cameraman, a buddy of Derek's, and just kind of shot for, what was it, Derek? Was it two days there?
Yeah, it was about 48 hours that we were there, yeah.
Yeah. Camped out, went around to some of these spots, and had a great time. Did get heat stroke at one point, and and that didn't dissuade us, so we're still at it.
Now you got to go back and shoot in the fall. That's when you got to go film.
Well, that's the funny thing about California is October's one of the worst times to actually go into the desert because all the Santa Ana winds kind of shift and everything dries out on you. So the fall is actually one of the worst times. The best time to go would be spring because they have like super blooms. All the wildflowers bloom, but you have millions and millions of tourists there as well. So it's kind of one of those areas that sees a lot of foot traffic, but a lot of people don't realize everything that's going on around them, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So y'all all got together on this. You've been out there. You've shot, you filmed the 48 hours. Everybody's going to jump up and down. Did you encounter, in the trailer, you didn't really see anything, or at least it didn't really lead to it, but you did find a lot of leads from a lot of locals, did you not?
We did.
A fair amount.
Go ahead, David.
Yeah, it was, there was, there's this one place in Ranchita that has, there's just this big Yeti statue out by the highway, and this little shop that's kind of part of it, and to a guy that was working in there, we talked to a few locals around Borrego Springs, and didn't get much from them, but we didn't really like go too hog wild asking everybody, hey, y'all seen Bigfoot? You know, like just stopping people in the street. We didn't want to get arrested.
You don't want to be that guy.
We'll save that for the actual film, you know.
Drive us out of town.
So, but we did find a pretty colorful character down pretty near the Mexico border. And he makes an appearance in this trailer, which is on Kickstarter, by the way, if we haven't said that yet. But yeah, this guy was a real character, and had to include him too. But it was fun, and the places are definitely spooky and worth checking out.
So I'm going to have to ask, because I know exactly which guy you're talking about. That dude looks like one of my uncles or something along that line. But like straight up, like that looks like it could be one of my family members, legitly be one of my family members. Hell, it might be. It might be one that we've missed, and I just don't know.
Well, you can come pick him up anytime.
Yeah, I'd like to go out there and meet the fella, get my picture made with him. That's the dude I want to hang out with. Yeah.
Bring your alien mask.
Yeah. Yeah, there's other things in that Winnebago, but no, we're good. So I guess
with 20 dogs, there were literally 20 dogs.
What's that?
Easily, yeah. 20 dogs in there.
That guy is
he looked like he'd be real handy. Like he looked like he could probably find some peyote blooms for you or something.
Yeah, the dude looked.
He could hook you up. Let's
yeah.
put it that
oh,
way.
For sure.
Yeah,
for
that
sure.
That guy's name was Coyote, and he was crazy in the best way possible. We talked to him for what, an hour and a half? Probably?
An hour, yeah, at least.
If y'all don't put him in the documentary, I don't know if we can be friends after that. Like he's gonna have to really. You're gonna have to spotlight him at least a little bit. But okay, so this was Derek's brainchild, and he reached out and got Dave. So Derek, I have to ask you this. What was it about this place? What one story about this place grabbed your attention to where you felt that pull to where I need to tell the story of this area?
Well, I'll tell you what, I read about all these Bigfoot stories and those were impressive. There was all these UFO encounters and there's alien encounters and other cryptids. But the one that really got me going was there's a ghost light reported in the southern end of the park. And this ghost light has been reported since, I believe, the 1850s when missionaries started going through California. They uncovered this. I should probably back up and say the natives have probably known about it even longer than that. But anyway, so this ghost light exists, and eventually they build the largest wooden trestle in the United States right in that same area. And it's a trestle that still stands today called the Goat Canyon Trestle. This thing is huge. Google it. You won't be disappointed. So at any rate, the... one of these days, 1975, I want to say, there was a train coming through there, and the conductor saw a light on the other side of the trestle and thought immediately, there's a train coming. I got to lock this thing up. So he calls back to the brakeman, you know, hit the brakes. They do so, it jackknifes, and a couple of the cars tumble over the trestle, and the brakeman's actually killed. And it turns out what he had actually seen was the ghost light. There was no train coming whatsoever. So that story intrigued me to the point where I'm like, I got to get out there and investigate just that. And as I started doing some research on that story, I uncovered so much more and realized, you know, this is bigger than just me.
I'm looking at the Goat Canyon Trestle right now.
Yeah.
That thing
that's pretty
is
impressive, huh?
That's very impressive. Very, very impressive. So it started with ghost lights, and then it's just escalated from there ever since. And then like what we discussed off air, there's tales of like a Bigfoot or some sort of Bigfoot.
Yeah, the Sandman, I think. He goes by several names, but I remember stories of just Native Americans talking about it, like you mentioned, early settlers moving through the area, and then even later into the 60s. And
it was very popular in the 60s and 70s and even the early 80s, that area, the Sasquatch, not only in Anza Borrego, but places like Joshua Tree, and Idlewild, and even where I live up here near Big Bear and Lake Arrowhead, there was all sorts of reports of these. They called them, had all kinds of different names for them. The Yucca Man, the Sandman, mm-hmm. the Mountain Devils, Zubies is another name they use.
Zubies, yeah.
And they're described as being like skinny or scrawny, and like a lighter color, like almost a blonde color rather than a dark brown or amber color. So I don't know if there's any variation, reason for the variation, or if they're trying to blend in with some of these lighter colored rocks or what the situation is. But it's kind of interesting that the reports all seem to be very similar, despite the fact that it's a creature we haven't found yet.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a sort of a resurgence, like you said, in I think it was the 60s with the, was it just Desert Magazine? Wasn't that what it was called?
Yeah, yeah, that was the big one, yeah.
Yeah, there was an article in there where I think it was an ex-Marine was out, you know, traipsing about the desert, came across this huge footprint and was able to make a cast of it and tried to, you know, tried to track whatever made that footprint down and wasn't ultimately able to, but it really kind of re-energized, you know, the stories of the place.
Now, I also saw where y'all, and I do know this because I remember now after we were discussing it, there's a lot of caves in that area, but they're not like the caves like we think of. They're more like washes, like where the, I guess, what are they called? Like a mud cave where it kind of digs itself out, I guess, the rains or whatnot that come through that area. So that's believed to be where some of those places, where some of these creatures could possibly be also, isn't it?
Yeah, we explored that area.
Absolutely.
We explored that area extensively. We spent hours in there, you know, kind of messing around. There's these huge caverns, you know, carved out by the water and the wind. And I actually did some research. I thought for sure these places were new, but those caves have been there for 5 million years. And of course, they're ever changing. They're not all, you know, it's mud, so they're going to erode and change. But there's been caves in that spot for that long. So if something's accustomed to hiding in there, you know, they've been doing it for quite a while.
Yeah, and that, it takes, first of all, forever to get to, and you need, you know, the best off-road vehicle that you can find to get there. But you get real deep into those, and they're called the Arroyo Tapiado caves down in there. And, yeah, Derek and I went and looking through it, saw some big cat tracks while we were there. Just looked and saw, like, you can start to go in, and it's not for the faint of heart because, you know, one little tremor or something, everything just kind of comes down on you. You don't want to spend too much time in there. But you go in there and they just kind of keep going. And it's not a cave like traditionally, like you'd think, you know, oh, we're going down and inside and it's all dark. And now these are like, they're like tunnels and then the ceiling opens up to the sky and then it comes back to a narrow, you know, little tunnel and kind of thing. And it's just, it's kind of wild getting up in there,
man. That
and this is 600,000 acres roughly, right?
Yeah it's about the size of Rhode Island.
When you guys were digging around and looking around, did you guys come across any petroglyphs or arrowheads or anything like that?
that was one of our goals. I'll let Derek tell you what happened to that one.
Well, part of my research, I've uncovered that there's thousands of petroglyphs hidden throughout the desert, and they're hidden for a good reason. You know, people like to graffiti them and destroy them and stuff like that. So people really don't want to share where these things are. So we're using these very basic clues to try to figure out where a couple of these petroglyphs are that may or may not show UFOs. They're these strange, bright green, yellow, and red, I want to say, object in the sky that the Native Americans had drawn. So anyway, we're out here looking for these things for hours and hours and hours, and we're climbing on boulders the size of houses and watching for snakes and bees and who knows what else. 105 degrees outside. So we're looking and looking, and we can't find them. Eventually we figure out where it is, and it's like 2 miles away. We could see it, but we figure we'll be dead by the time we get there. So we kinda,
that was after 4 hours. So we were kind of like, we'll hit you next time.
See we kind of gave up for the day, but we ended up getting heat stroke out of the deal. Both David and I did.
Oh, man.
We've definitely sweat for this movie already.
Man, how was the astrophotography? Do you got a good view of the stars out there at night?
Oh, it's beautiful. You know, the funny thing about Anza Borrego is it's one of California, and it may be California's only, I always get this term wrong, nighttime community or dark sky community or whatever that
dark
term
sky
is. Dark sky maybe. But it's one of the only ones, if not the only one in California. So when you're out there, you can see everything. There's satellites going by, like you name it, you can see it. And that's why this is such a big UFO hotspot, in addition to its proximity to so many military bases, both known and unknown.
Yeah.
So we've got this all laid down, and this y'all have been out there for 48 hours, but the real reason that they're here, y'all, and that we had them on is because they're wanting to go back and really dig into this. So why don't you tell them what y'all's plans are, the whole thing that you're planning to do?
Yeah, we just launched a Kickstarter, and we're asking for about $20,000 to go out there and do this feature-length documentary about this. And the goal is to explore this, see if there's actually anything to all these reports. And there are hundreds of different kind of reports. We even made a Google map and put pins in of, you know, where the stuff is located. And it's going to take a lot to get out there and do that. And so this Kickstarter is going to run for 4 weeks. So, you know, if you're thinking about helping us out and trying to make this project happen, please do go on and make it over to there and help us out with that, because there's not a lot of time to do it. And if we don't get it all, then we don't get any of it. You know what I mean? So if we do get funded, we're going to go out there, shoot all we're going to pick like some of the paranormal tales, especially there's a lot of ghost tales of the Old West that I want to focus on. That's where you were talking about the Lady in White. There's some old like bandits that got shot, kind of shot each other for like treasure that they found, or like a bank robbery or stagecoach robbery kind of thing. And so there's like, you know, white horses that are supposed to run through the desert as ghosts and all kinds of cool stuff for that. And then the UFOs, obviously. And then the cryptids, there was even the coyote told us about the dog man that was running across the highways down there. So besides Sandman, there's dog men, there's all kinds of stuff, the huge skeletons, shambling things, demons, floating demon heads, apparently.
That's one of my favorites.
And the ghost lights.
It's going to take $15,000 worth of fresh water just to hang out there and film this.
It might.
For real. Might. Yeah.
$15,000 is going to, we're just going to drive a big old water truck out there.
Water and sunscreen.
Sip from it.
Well, Flora, what's your favorite, stories that got you, like besides of Derek and his smooth operator voice and how he corrosed you into coming and going, what was the story that really sold you on it?
I love the Old West ghost tales.
Lay it on us. Let's hear them.
Yeah. Well, there's the one that we see in the trailer. I'll tell you about this one. I'll flesh it out a little bit. The Vallecito stage station is out there, and we kind of traipsed around that at night because there's supposed to be some graves of a couple people who died on the stagecoach trail back in the day. And in particular, one grave of a woman who was supposed to be, I think she was like either a bride, newly married, or was going to be married, but she was riding the stagecoach line. She was sick. And whatever she came down with, they got to the Vallecito station. She was just overcome with it and pretty much died in agony in the station, and they buried her right there somewhere on the grounds. And there, it's known. We were in the dark and kind of doing this ourselves.
I got you.
Trying not to get caught and stuff. So we didn't see the graves that time. But we're going to go back and find them probably during the day. And
to add a bit to that story that you might have missed there, David, she was going to San Diego actually to be married. And she was traveling with her wedding dress, and they found her dress as they were burying her. And of course, they buried her in a dress.
So that's what it was.
Yeah.
So now that's where the Lady in White
wanders there. Yeah, as a Lady in White.
Mm. Yeah. So if people want to contribute to this, like, how do they find when they go to Kickstarter? What do they look for?
The name of the documentary is Shadows in the Desert: High Strangeness in the Borrego Triangle, and probably have links to give you guys so you can send them out to listeners or put them on the show notes and stuff. But yeah, I'm sure if you search that or maybe search Blurry Monsters Media on Kickstarter, either one of those.
I love that name, by the way.
Thanks.
It's perfect. It really is. Yes, it's perfect.
Yeah, we'll definitely. We'll put it in our show notes. We'll share it on all forms of social media, things like that.
I don't know how y'all, man. I don't know how you'd make up your mind, because y'all, there's everything. Everything's been reported in this area. I guess aside from like time slips or missing people. I mean, is there like time slips going on? If there was time slips.
There's tons of missing people over there, though. I don't know about time slips, but I was doing some research the other day and found probably 24 missing people in the last 10 years in the park. So
all you need is a time slip. A time slip and a black-eyed kid.
The bingo cards filled out.
Yeah. Time slips and black-eyed kids, and y'all are covered at all. Like, y'all, I don't know how you're going to streamline it down, because there's bound to be something crazy take place while y'all are out here doing that video. There's bound to be.
Yeah.
That's the hope.
For sure.
That's not the hope. Easy now. Easy.
Well, you know, we're kind of going into this. We're not experts on the area. We know a little bit. We've done some research. Right. And we've done as much research as we can being away from that area. We got to get to the libraries. We got to talk to people. We got to talk to park officials. So we're going to kind of learn with the audience, I think, on this one, because there's just so much to absorb and to dig through. People are just going to be on that journey with us, and they're going to find out as we do what's important and what's not.
Oh man, I can't wait.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it.
And then with the Kickstarter, you know, you got to have some like stretch goals. So we've got a couple set out there for people if we get over the 20,000 mark. And one of them is this really cool featurette that we have thought about, where we're going to look for, there's a lost ship in the desert, said to contain a bunch of treasure. There's a couple of like lost treasure things.
Oh, that's cool.
Out there. And we want to, you know, tap into that a little bit too.
Man. I feel like we should probably explain how a ship gets lost in the desert.
Yeah. I think that would really help out right now. Cause I'm like, okay. It's awesome. So I'm going with it.
Very high winds out there. Yeah. Those things can fly across
that sand. That's exactly what it is.
Y'all come up with this right after the heat stroke?
Yeah, right. Was y'all laying around under your tent, hanging out with Coyote?
We came up with that, yeah, after.
You and old Coyote, y'all had shared a nice lukewarm Budweiser.
And some mescaline.
Right? Y'all was passing around the devil's lettuce and decided, you know what? There's a rowboat out here somewhere. It happens.
The real legend is, and you guys are going to love this, there's a place there called the Salton Sea, and it used to be called the Salton Sink, and it was a dry lake bed that's been there for thousands of years, and it's kind of an extension of the Bay of California down in Baja. So what they think is this Viking ship, you know, kind of went into that bay and then somehow got stuck there, got stranded, something broke, and these reports, hundreds of years worth of reports of people stumbling upon this Viking ship that's just sitting in this dry lake bed. And eventually it got moved and buried and somebody took off with it or something along those lines. It's now lost and nobody knows exactly where it is. Now there's a parallel story that it's a Spanish galleon that is actually lost, which could make sense as well, but there wasn't water in that region at that time. So there's a lot of like gray area, whether or not this is factual, but that hasn't stopped people from looking. And there's tons of other treasure stories in this area as well. So there's plenty of gold to be found. It's just a matter of getting out there.
The idea of a Viking ship out there is awesome. I can't.
Cool.
It just sounds amazing.
Yeah. I've not heard of this. I've never heard of this story. That's awesome.
We really hope that we can cover it with, you know, we get the stretch goal and we can do that little segment on the Blu-ray or DVD or whatever.
This could end up being two or three parter. You may end up making several films.
Oh boy.
Of out there in this whole thing. Yeah. Now you've opened up. Right. You'll have to, it's all filmed at night.
Yeah. You just see our skin get more leathery and leathery the whole
time. Eventually y'all all live out there in a Winnebago with 20 dogs.
That's what happened.
Yeah. So it goes down. I'm down.
Get a documentary back in the 80s.
I'm 100%. Yeah. That's probably what it's just one of those things. And I think there's a lot of them throughout the United States that are extremely hotbed areas like what y'all are going to check out they don't get the shine that certain areas get that we talk about. When you talk about Skinwalker Ranch or you talk about
Bridgewater Triangle,
there's other places around here that's very odd, very strange, just like this. And they don't get the shine. And the reason they don't get the shine is what y'all just discussed. It's so hot. I just looked at the average temperature for the year of that
David
park.
David doesn't know about this, so don't share this.
Okay, yeah. I retract that. Dave, don't look
Derek's
at that.
Still trying to get me to come up to him. He's not sure yet.
I will tell you, I'll just tell you this right here. Born and raised in Texas, I was, and that makes me go, ooh, ooh, ooh.
It's a dry heat, though.
Keep telling yourself that. Right. Yeah, you're like, go, ooh, man.
No, but you, You hit it though. Like it's, you hear so many, you see and hear all these documentaries about, you know, the same old thing. You go out in the woods and look for this kind of stuff. We feel like this is a very unique opportunity to showcase something that hasn't been seen before in the paranormal world and really kind of dive in the way we want to do it. Not like, you know, the way a studio would kind of mess with it if they got a hold of it. And that's why we're going the Kickstarter route. And, We want people to know that Derek and I are going to, you know, put our touches on this and do it our way. And we feel like people will really enjoy this unique experience and learn a ton of new stuff that never, you know, really gets to see the light of day.
Oh, for sure. And it I'm glad y'all are doing it. It needs to be done. This is something that needs to be where more people know about this.
Yeah, I can't wait. You guys both run your own fantastic podcast. Before we let you go, would you tell people each about your own podcast and if they want to get a hold of you, if they have any questions before they decide to donate
stories to
Kickstart
share
or
anything?
Stories to share. Could you tell the listeners about that?
Yeah, that's a great call there. If anybody has any reports or experiences or encounters from that area, please do give us a shout. Derek, you want to go first?
Yeah, and actually I can make it easy for you. You can find my show basically anywhere you can find a podcast. It's a call-in show about monsters. I play like 5-minute voicemails left by people that have experienced strange things, Bigfoot, UFO, ghosts, you name it. I try to cover it. So if you have an experience from Anza-Borrego, I guess for anywhere, you can call my hotline at 1-888-608-NIGHT. That's 1-888-608-6444. And that's a toll-free call throughout the U.S. Either that or you can shoot me an email, which if you go to our website, monstersamongspodcast.com, you can find all my contact information there as well.
Yeah, and I'm over at blurryphotos.org. I'm on all the major streaming stuff. You can find it in any podcatcher probably. And as you guys know, I dive pretty deeply into the research of this stuff. I aim for very high production quality and very high research quality to deliver a lot of information in little nuggets for you. And that's, again, blurryphotos.org. And you can either hit me up on the contact page there, or you can go to Facebook and send me a message on there.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks for coming on today.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Appreciate it.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. Yeah, pretty cool interview with the guys.
I'm glad we got him on. I'm glad I got to talk to Derek and we got to BS with him. But Dave, we've known him Dave's great.
Yeah.
Flora's hilarious.
Yeah, we've had him on the show before.
And they do a great job. Like, their shows are great. Like, there's more. If y'all haven't heard of them, there you go. You go check those dudes out.
Yeah, Monsters Among Us and Blurry Photos.
Yeah.
Both fantastic podcasts. And help them fund this thing. I think it's going to be very interesting. Shadows in the Desert. I'll put links to it in the show notes. But if you don't feel like doing that, just go to Kickstarter.
.com,
you know, and when you go in there, you can go in the search bar and just type Shadows in the Desert and it'll pull up. You can watch the trailer that they've already filmed. It's a very interesting part of the world that I'm glad that they're doing a documentary on, because there's so many shows on the Bermuda Triangle, places like that, but there's nothing about the Borrego Triangle that I've ever seen other than just like a small clip of something 20 seconds long. I've never seen a full length documentary on it. So I hope they get it funded. Let's get over there. Let's donate. Let's support. I know if you do, you'll get some cool things. I know they put your names in the credits. Mm-hmm. You can get all kinds of swag, clothing, shirts and things like that. I don't have the list directly in front of me, but that I think it's going to be a very cool documentary. I wish I had time to do that. I've just got too much going on to also getting to the world of filming documentaries, but it looks cool, right? Like, I always see these shows, and for whatever reason, like, man, the History Channel is really ramping up that are like paranormal shows.
Yes.
There's been a lot on there. There's the new one with William Shatner. I don't remember what it's called, The Unexplained or something like that.
And then he's like in his mid 80s, I believe.
He's got to be.
Yeah.
He's got to be, man.
Shatner's still working, still killing it.
Still killing it. There's a whole bunch of shows over there. And so it's very interesting when it comes to stuff like that. Oh, speaking of interesting, did you see, hold on, I'm trying to find it.
Uh-oh, what have you got for me?
Did you see where a man in Mexico was attacked by a chupacabra?
No.
Yes, this is very, this just came out.
Whoa. For real? He got mauled by one?
Yes, Valle de Bravo, Mexico. It says Mauricio.
Is that Eddie's? That's Eddie's probably
that's lost one of his cousins that. For yeah. sure. Mauricio Osorio Dominguez, who's the mayor of Valle de Bravo, state of Mexico, reported that a body of a 54-year-old taxi driver was found with deep wounds and torn clothing.
Oh, wait. It killed him.
Oh, yeah, he's dead. They found his body on March 1st. They said the cause of death of the attack, the cause of death was an attack of a carnivorous and dangerous animal. It says immediately after the announcement, fear sprung among the population.
No joke.
To the extent that basic education classes were suspended. Now, researchers have come and looked at the body, and they think, get this, Cam, we joke about this all the time, they think that in reality, it was the guy was attacked by a lion or a Bengal tiger that had maybe allegedly escaped from a nearby ranch. But the mayor does not want to rule out the possibility that it could have been something else from the forest. And many people in the area are now claiming it's a chupacabra. So even today, 2020,
I didn't know he killed the fella.
Oh yeah, he's dead. Apparently there's been a string of people being killed in the area just in the last 8 months or so.
And they're thinking that let's say it's not the chupacabra and it is like a tiger or something. That's not good either.
But you know, you watch these shows like Narcos and stuff. These guys, the drug dealers,
balling out of control.
Well, they said it was a tiger that escaped from a nearby ranch. What other guys have pet tigers?
This is true. This is very true. You got a really good point.
You know, Narcos, right? That's what I'm thinking. But there are people that think that the chupacabra is on the loose. But, you know, it doesn't have the telltale signs of a chupacabra attack. Chupacabras, remember, they drain the blood of their victims. This guy, he wasn't drained of blood. He was just tore up.
He was drained of blood.
Well, not all of it.
Just not that way.
Not all of it.
That's right. Just not the way the chupacabra does it.
Right?
His just ran out from gravity. Whenever that tiger gets hold of you.
Yeah, and of course the article goes into, you know, the whole history and stuff.
Which is the reason, if I would have seen one from my deer stand, I'm calling y'all to come pick me up.
Don't call me, because I'm going to be like,
coming.
Wrong number, prank caller, yeah, right. Wrong number, right? Was that on Pulp Fiction?
Yes. Just leave me
up
there.
You gotta come help me.
Nope, not going. You're on your own now, player.
Oh man, have you seen the new trailer for the movie Morbius, where he's like a vampire?
Yes, I have.
That looks pretty cool.
It looks good. Yeah, it looks very, very good. Yes,
it's kind of like Blade.
Yeah, I'm pretty stoked.
They're making a new Blade as well.
Yep, I'm excited.
I have not seen the trailer to that, so. I don't know how good that. How old is Wesley Snipes now?
103. He just had his 103rd birthday.
He's got to be pretty old. I would say he's definitely probably in his 60s, right?
If he's not, he's awful close. Probably. Well, wait a minute. No, I bet he's probably mid 50s.
You think?
Yeah. We should have looked that up now that we're talking about it. We need to know how old Wesley Snipes is.
Yeah, well, go.
Hold on here.
You got a keyboard right in front of you. What are you waiting on?
Wesley Snipes. Here we go. We're going to find out.
He's some great movies, especially The Blades, but also, what was the one where he's like in the airplane? It's like a terrorist attack, and he's like skydiving and stuff.
He's 57.
57, okay.
I like Demolition Man. You're talking about Passenger 57.
That's what it is?
I like New Jack City.
Yeah, well, of course. Nino Brown, baby.
Nino Brown.
Don't forget about Pookie.
Oh, yep. That's Chris Rock back in the day when he was a young man.
Yeah, yeah.
And then what was it? White Men Can't Jump.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. I forgot about that.
What about when he was Willie Mays Hayes in Major League? That was great too, right?
You know, the Major League movies, that I used to love them when I was younger, but I was
recently... Don't you talk bad about the first one. The rest of them might be second on, but the first one's good.
First one's really good. But I remember trying to watch it with the kids, and I was like, you know, secretly to myself, I'm like, man, this ain't as good as I remember.
You know what? The other movie I remember that I really, really liked. I forgot that he was in U.S. Marshals. I liked him in Money Train, but I really, really liked him in the movie Rising Sun. Remember that with him with Sean Connery?
Was that with like the Yakuza?
Yeah, they were dealing with the Japanese businessman.
I remember that.
I really liked that Wesley Snipes. And then I know he's done a bunch of them like Seagal has. You know, he's done a bunch of them that are kind of iffy, you know, and all this. Like what'd he do? Like Gallo Walkers. Remember he was one of those.
I think he needed to pay the Uncle
Sam. He probably did.
The IRS.
What was the one? The contractor where he's supposed to, stuff like that. But wasn't he in the Expendables? He was in that one time when they had to break him out, like the third one. Wasn't there one with Ronda Rousey and all them in it where he was in prison?
I don't know if I saw that one.
And they like ride a train in there to break him out?
I don't know if I saw that one. I mean, I know I had to suspend belief, but I have a hard time watching like 75-year-old men just beating everybody up.
Without getting tired. They're not normal 75-year-old men, though. They're on all the gear.
You have to be. You can't be an old man like that and yoked like that. I'm not complaining.
No, I still go with what Joe Rogan says is Stallone is the canary in the coal mine. If he's living as long and as healthy as he is by taking all that stuff, obviously it can't be that bad for you.
Well, you're 100% right. Look at Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yep. Same thing. You know, the doctors tell you steroids are terrible for you. Well, it doesn't seem to be affecting them.
It does. It affects them in the positive.
I think these doctors are
y'all
just haters.
Y'all see me? Y'all don't even see me. Like, I need to get on the gear.
Yeah, I think these doctors are haters. They're
That's right.
Hate. Because they don't look like hate, that. Their hate, career hate, isn't that
hate,
good.
Hate.
Man, speaking of hate, what do you got planned for the rest of your week?
I'm in lockdown. I don't want to catch corona.
Man, I'm so sick and tired of this.
You're going to get it because you already got a compromised immune system.
Yeah. It's just everybody's going on and on about it. It's just ridiculous.
What I'm going to do the rest of this week is prepare for my trip to Waco.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's what I'm doing.
Aren't you going on a big vacation soon? Aren't you going to, like...
I'm going to Asheville, North Carolina in April.
Yeah, that's coming up. Yep. I knew something was coming up. That's pretty cool.
Yep, going to go check that out. Never been up there. Going to go check all that out.
You going to hang out with Hanks?
Yep. Yeah, I already talked to him. I'm going to have to go see the Micah, see what he's up to. He's already offered, of course, to be the guide. He's like, I'll show you around. I'm like, yeah, no joke. Like, is there part of Asheville you don't know? But I don't know. It's for my 25th wedding anniversary, so I don't know how much my wife is going to be down with wanting to go like to Brown Mountain and look for the Brown Mountain lights and do all that stuff. I'm going to bet thumbs down on that idea when I throw that out there. But
yeah, but there's all those little micro breweries and stuff that would be fun, right?
And it looks like they got good restaurants. We're going to go see the Biltmore, the largest house in the United States. The Vanderbilt's built way back in the day.
Yeah.
We're going to go check all that out. There's a lot of cool stuff. Man, they got like a zip line down there. First of all, it looks beautiful. Anyway, so, and neither one of us had been there, and that's the reason we chose it. We're like, let's pick a spot neither one of us had ever been. It looks fun, and we both liked it. So we just said, hey, let's go.
Hey, man, why not? What a perfect time of the year to go.
It ought to be perfect.
We don't have any plans. I think.
Except baseball.
Yeah, I think late July we're going to go to Galveston again.
Yeah, word.
But that's it.
And then late August, early September, we're going back to Arizona.
Yeah. Yep. I'm going to look for... I'm going to be near the Borrego. I'm going to look for this 8-foot-tall skeleton with the lantern in his chest.
Right.
Sasquatches.
If I see that, you better make sure you're back in the ride because we're going to be heading back east if we see something like that in Arizona.
Yeah.
No waiting. No, I'm just going to throw everything loosely into the back of the truck and we're going to get gone.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, folks. Well, that's about all we have for this episode. Don't forget to go over to Kickstarter and look up Shadows in the Desert to support Derek Hayes and David Flora on this documentary that they're trying to produce. I think it's really going to be pretty cool. And also, don't forget to check out their podcast. Be safe out there. Till next time, I'm Kyle Filson. He's Kim Hale.
Peace, y'all.
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.